What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing Podcast.
What do you want to do tonight?
The same thing we do every night, Pinky. Try to take over the world.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back. Get comfortable while you're here. Just settle in. Maybe put on like a Bill Belichick style hoodie. You know, one of those ones that's like objectively gross and should absolutely get thrown out, but it's also like super comfortable. Brent, you got any of those? You know what I'm talking about? I call them inside hoodies.
For sure. I have multiple just disgusting hoodies that I only wear inside. But now that I live in sunny California, it's really just during the 2 weeks of winter. But those 2 weeks, I'm wearing them and spilling food on them and then not washing them and throwing them back in the closet until the next winter.
That's smart. That's a good way to do it. I've become a long sleeve t-shirt guy during the pandemic. I think it's one of the more practical pieces of clothing we've ever invented.
Oh, that's a great call. The two long sleeve t-shirts that I own, I cherish, but I never seek them out.
Right. That's what I've had to retrain my brain to do, because I have way too many hoodies, but not enough long sleeve t-shirts. So now when I'm on the lookout, I just go straight to the long sleeve t-shirt section. But they are rare. It's a dying breed. Maybe we should bring them back personally.
Yeah. I think we should bring it back. Maybe like a line of Mariners. Sorry. Yeah, some bootlegs. Some boot arms.
So that voice you heard belongs to Brent Flyberg, a stand-up comedian whose album, 20 for 30, you can stream. That's very cool. You may have also seen Brent at Bumbershoot, Folklife, Bridgetown Comedy Festival, or just around Seattle where he used to live. Brent, what is shaking? How is your life going? How are you living?
Oh, I'm doing good. Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here to talk about the Mariners. Very, very kind of you to plug my album. I don't know if you've noticed, but I made a mistake when I was uploading it. So it's not it's not categorized as comedy. It's categorized as world high life. And the steps I would need to take to correct it are frankly just more than I want to do. So no one's going to find it like on their own. So if you want to listen, yeah, if you want to listen to my stand-up comedy EP, it's on all the platforms, but it's just categorized as world high life music.
That is tough. It does come up when you Google your name though. So I guess that's something.
Okay. That's but good.
I didn't even notice good. The high life thing.
Yeah. I don't think it's something that's like immediately apparent, but if you go into Spotify, yeah, it's just like, you know, all the metadata tags are wrong. And CD Baby, the company that I used to like distribute, I basically fucked up so bad, dude. I overpaid because the service, whatever, this is not interesting to anyone, but basically I was like, hey, I couldn't choose comedy when I was uploading it. And so I just chose whatever. And then I like emailed CD Baby and I was like, it won't let me change it now. It also wouldn't let me edit it later. And they were like, oh yeah, well the option that you paid for doesn't, I don't know. It was like a weird thing where it was like, you can't upload it as comedy because of these like settings that you basically paid for. And it's like, well, I'm just not going to deal with this.
I know the internet is too confusing. I think every album should be distributed on floppy disks and we'll go back to like a hardware based system.
That's a great, if you're listening to this and you can't find my album, email me and I'll send you a floppy.
That's a perfect solution. What is like, who are you competing with in the world high life genre? What even is that?
I have no idea. I think it's a specific type of music, but I haven't. This is a good question. I should have looked into that. I don't know. Maybe it's Steve Winwood because he has the song, you know, Living the High Life again. So maybe it's just me and Steve Winwood in the Spotify High Life section.
That is probably a losing battle. Steve Winwood has really a strong, he has a stronghold on all things higher, I guess. Higher Love, also a Steve Winwood banger.
Yeah, you're right. Damn, dude. What was I thinking?
I don't know. It's okay, though. You made it. Like, you're still alive. You know, you survived a pandemic this far, at least. You know, this 3 years ago isn't really affecting you now, it seems like, at least health-wise.
Yes, not health-wise. That's a good call. Not health-wise. And it's probably not affecting my wallet, but I do wonder if I'd be getting more streams if I had categorized it properly. But we'll never know.
We'll never know. I'm doing all right. You didn't ask, but I am doing all right. I have been reeling for the past few days due to some new information I came across. I was recently at Safeway, a grocery store that I frequent. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can ask about them. They're everywhere. And I found myself in the Oreo wing of the store. And it turns out that Oreo is pushing a carrot cake flavor. Have you seen this? Heard about this?
No, I mean, have you seen this? Have you heard about this? No, I have not.
Oh, man.
You are brave for even walking down through the Oreo wing. I have the impulse control of a child. And so I try not to go down that aisle because it just never ends well for me.
Well, I think it would have ended better if I hadn't come across this vile concoction. And for all I know, they could be pretty good. Like, I do like carrot cake, but I think it's all about texture, right? Like, I don't want the Oreo version of carrot cake. Also, like, your Oreo, just make Oreos. I don't understand why they feel like they have to make all these new flavors now.
Well, I think I got to disagree with you here. I think the Oreo variations are exciting. A regular Oreo, of course, a great cookie, but it's not gonna get my blood boiling. Like, have you ever had like the white chocolate fudge Oreos? That's a good Oreo.
No, I've only had Oreo and the reverse Oreo, golden Oreo, or they were called Oreos for a minute. Yeah. That was fun.
That's a good one. Yeah, I would try. I think I would probably like this carrot cake Oreo. I think Oreo is sort of like they're sort of like a Taco Bell where like they're not making real food, but whatever kind of chemistry they're using just hits my pleasure centers in the right ways. So I bet I would fucking, if I had a, I would probably take down a sleeve of carrot cake Oreos if left unattended.
Oh yeah. Listen, I agree with you 100%. I know for a fact that anything Oreo makes, I would eat, like, no question about it. It was more just the principle of it. Like, I was getting upset that we gave Oreo this much power, maybe. Like, there literally was like seven different types of Oreos in this Safeway. And I got to thinking, like, surely there's another company that has been pushed to the margins because of carrot cake Oreo. And that's fucked up to me.
Yeah, that's, I mean, dude, that's everyone, whatever. I was trying to make some sort of statement about capitalism. I'm too dumb.
Right. I've been furiously emailing Nabisco just trying to make heads or tails of this. And it feels, I don't know, it feels like a lot to just stumble across in aisle 12, you know? So I needed to just make sure that they don't, like, surprise any people, like, in the future. I'm looking out for people like me and you who stumble into the Oreo wing and don't know what's in there. But I didn't get very far up the Nabisco ladder, so I decided to just do this instead, which I'm thrilled about. Happy to have
air it out. Air it out so nobody else is walking into that aisle unprepared.
Yeah, but at the same time, if anyone is a fan of the carrot cake Oreo or is brave enough or intoxicated enough to try them, absolutely let me know, because then I'll feel safer if I know that they're actually edible, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to know too.
Great. So, Brent, you're a comedian in LA, as I mentioned, chasing those showbiz dreams, but you're here to talk about the Mariners for an episode of our little series here, Why I'm a Mariners Fan. So am I correct in assuming that you were sired and raised in the Pacific Northwest?
This is accurate. I'm a former resident of Brier, Washington, 98036. Grew up in Brier, went to Mount Lake Terrace High School, lived in Seattle. I mean, I went to college at Spokane, but basically I lived in Mariners country for the first most of the first 31 years of my life.
Okay, that's pretty cool. So when I was doing research for this, and by research I mean typing in your Twitter handle plus the word baseball, I did come across some statements about your career. Would you like to tell our millions of listeners about playing college baseball? What school was it? Was it competitive? Was it hilarious? What happened in your college baseball world?
So I played 1 year at Shoreline Community College, which I wonder if that even comes up when you search it. But I played 1 year at Shoreline Community College and then 3 years at Whitworth University. If you want to get really technical, 1 year at Whitworth College and then they changed their name. So then 2 years at Whitworth University. But Shoreline Community College in the NWAC, junior college, Wood Bat League, and then 3 years at Whitworth. I think I've calculated it before. I wonder if you found it on my Twitter, but I think in the 4 years of college baseball that I played, the teams that I was on had a combined win-loss record of like 40 wins and 110 losses. It was an exercise in humility mostly. I played that 1 year at Shoreline Community College. If I remember correctly, we started the season by losing 10 games in a row. And then we went and we played Tacoma Community College, who at the time was undefeated. They had won 7 games in a row. And we beat them twice. And then we immediately, our next doubleheader was against Skagit Community College, who was like a powerhouse at the time. I don't know if they still are. But we beat them the first game and then lost the next game. And we were like, okay, maybe we're not that bad. And then I think we lost like 20 games in a row. That team, if I remember correctly, finished 5-34. And then I transferred to Whitworth, where I was not much more successful personally or as a team. I was the Northwest Conference Pitcher of the Week, honorable mention, once. I have two here. Okay, I am going to brag a little bit. These are my two brag-worthy collegiate pitching moments. My one start, the only start I had in college was a complete game. That was the week I got honorable mention for Pitcher of the Week. It was senior day. It was a pity start. And then I played very well. But then the other one was my junior year. We played. So every year we would drive to Lewiston to play Lewis and Clark State. And if you're not familiar with Lewis and Clark State, Lewis and Clark State is essentially like last chance university for baseball. It is an NAIA powerhouse. It is where you go. They have a wall outside the field of all the players that have been drafted in the last, however many years. And it's an impressive list. Like I think Keith Folk went there. Bucky Jacobson is another one that I remember because he was a Mariner, not because he had a particularly successful career. But they've had, they had a legendary coach, Ed Sheff, and they were just churning out major league players. And so we would drive down there because they would play us because we were a D3 school. So none of the D1 schools like Gonzaga or WSU or even I think Central eventually played us. But a lot of those schools wouldn't play us because it was a no-win situation for them. Because if they lost to us, it like really hurt their standings. And beating us was, assumed. But we would go and we would play Lewis and Clark State and they would absolutely pummel us. And my junior year, Whitworth had played them every year for, however long, and had not won a game against Lewis and Clark State in 11 years. And I had a two inning save and struck out a 3-year starter with the tying run on third base. And such a distinct memory of when we won, I celebrated on the field and one of my own teammates from the dugout yelled, "Act like you've been here before." And I still think about it a lot. But also I truly had never been there before and I would never return. Whatever.
No, I side with you here for sure. Definitely let it all out. And I did Google the list of Lewis and Clark State alumni who made the big leagues. You're forgetting another Mariner legend, Brendan Ryan, also went there.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's great.
Yeah, 2000 to 2003. So he was there for a minute. Blaine Hardy Brennan also Ryan. In the mix.
That's right. I played summer ball with Blaine Hardy. I forgot that he after Portland, because it's the school where you, yeah, if you like, not that this is what Blaine Hardy did, but like if you go to a D1 school and it doesn't work out for whatever reason, if you flame out academically or you just decide like, I just want to get drafted, I don't care about school, you go to Lewis and Clark State, I think partially because their academic programs are not super robust.
Sure. That we didn't come to play school approach. I love that.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, I played summer ball with Blaine Hardy. That's funny that you, yeah, because I was thinking about that. Like, who did I play with who ended up in the major leagues? And he's the only one who I like knew. Very nice guy. Classic baseball guy who like, you know, wasn't a very studious person, but very kind and just a baseball machine.
Oh, I bet. Those guys, like, whenever you come across an athlete who is, like, going to go pro but at a younger age, it's very, like, jarring sometimes to see that play out right in front of your face. Like, oh, you're, like, legitimately good at this. Like, we're good at this, but you're, like, good at this.
And it was also, it was weird because, like, I didn't think he was going to be the guy. Like, he was very good, but he wasn't the, like, freak athlete that some of the other players I played. You know, I played with a few guys who were, like, 17 and bumping 95 with a fastball, and Blaine Hardy was like, you know, he was throwing mid 80s and winning and doing well, but he never seemed like he was the like physical freak that you needed to be to make it to the major leagues, as opposed to like I played against Travis Snyder in high school, who was just head and shoulders so much like physically more than everyone else on the field that it was like, yeah, of course this guy's going pro. Whereas Blaine Hardy, it just seemed like, yeah, this guy's a good athlete. He'll have a good career in college and that'll probably be it. But no, he's been a Major League Baseball player for like 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, no, that's incredible. I'm thinking now to my childhood. I flamed out of baseball much earlier than you did, but the kids in our orbit who are like around my age who are really good. Oh, I mentioned him actually before we were recording. Zach LaVine dunked so hard on this kid in my Spanish class. Like, you know those dunks? I don't know if this is technically a foul, and like I would hate if they called it, so it doesn't matter. But like the dunk where the dunker like puts his foot on the defender's chest and like gets it higher. Yeah, one of those. So that was tough to watch, but also very cool to watch, you know. I remember Peyton Siva coming to my high school like as a visiting player. He was pretty good.
That's cool. Yeah. Yeah, basketball too. The range of like physical ability is crazy, and it's different with baseball because like, you know, a guy like Travis Snyder, he only gets so many at bats per game, whereas one basketball player has the ability to completely take over a game. So yeah, if you have Zach LaVine or Peyton Siva and then a bunch of like 16-year-olds, like it's just not fair.
Yeah, I remember also, does the name Max Brown mean anything to you? He was Skyline's quarterback who was like top prospect, went to USC, but didn't really do anything from there.
Sounds vaguely familiar, but not really.
So he went to Skyline, my rival high school. And again, I did not play football, but I remember watching him play our team. And me and my friends who were just like in the bleachers, I remember we came up with this plan to like try to plant weed on him to get him in trouble, which is so fucked up. Like, would not advocate for that. Obviously, we didn't carry it out either. We were just like sitting around like, what can we do to make sure our high school wins this football game? And somehow that idea started rattling around.
But you never, there were no steps taken. It was just kind of a
no, no. Okay. I think because we, you know, pulling back the curtain on my life, we were definitely weed smokers as well. And we thought that was like kind of against the code of weed, you know, to like use it for evil. So.
To besmirch the good name of weed and in the service of personal gain
over high school football in Sammamish. I played baseball. I was like one of those kids who was way better, like 8, 9, 10 years old when the other kids like can't even catch the ball. You know, that was when I peaked. But I played up until.
Were you bigger too? Were you like
no?
Because
so,
I
no.
okay.
Yeah, I was a small middle infield type leadoff hitter, contact guy. But I played up until sophomore year of high school. I retired. Mm-hmm. I used the word retired because I didn't want to do – I didn't – okay, so my sophomore year of high school, I played for a club team. I didn't want to do high school baseball because I heard they had practice every day, and that seemed like a lot. So I played for this club team. It was really funny. We staged a mutiny and got our coach fired, which was hilarious.
Whoa.
Yeah. It was kind of hot shit. Like I remember we were at a practice and like the club team had like a general manager, heavy air quotes, you know, just like the guy who funded everything. And we went to him because he was at the practice and we went to him and we were like, this coach is horrible. Like we did. I remember there was one practice in like a February, you know, drizzle in Washington where we did pickoffs for like 45 minutes and no one thought that made any sense. So that was like the last straw. We're like, we can't do this anymore, coach. And then they brought in this college kid who was home for the summer, maybe even home for the whole season because he was injured or whatever. But he was just like, yeah, I'll be your coach. And he let me pitch in a tournament when it's like, you know, bottom of the barrel, like, hey, everyone has 85 pitches. We haven't used any of yours. And I did the same thing you did, complete game, but it was like 9-7. Like I gave up a lot of runs, but I did pitch that whole game. And then after that,
that was your only start?
Only pitching of the whole season. I was extremely not a pitcher. Yeah. I was up there. It was position player pitching shit. I was throwing like 35 probably with like a little bit of movement, trying to keep everything below the knees. And then after that, I decided I was good and started focusing more on my weed smoking career, which is ongoing.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Good transition. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm very prolific in this stage of my life. Not as good at baseball, although I haven't played real baseball in a while. Do you ever like get out? Are you in like a men's league or anything? Do you ever get out there and play? Like
I used to play, I mean, before, you know, the world closed, I played co-ed softball with, you know, like work friends. I would play co-ed softball and that was a lot of fun, but it's I have had to, as I've gotten older, like distance myself from sports in general, both playing and spectating, because I'm like I often do not like the person I become around sports. As much as I like sports, I think that I kind of have to enjoy them alone. I have a bit of a temper and I'm pretty good at keeping a lid on it. But when sports are involved, it's all bets are off.
I feel that. I within arm's reach of me right now, I have a Kyle Seager bobblehead. I have a Jewel Lloyd bobblehead. I have a framed drawing of Dirk Nowitzki in my living room. Like it's very,
very cool.
It's very sports. But I do the same thing that you do. Like when I meet new people, I always try to like ease it in, you know, and then when they find out like how into sports I am, particularly the Mariners and baseball, I always have to preface it like, yeah, so I am like pretty into the Mariners, but not in an annoying way, you know, like I always have to make sure they know that I'm not gonna like ruin my actual life over baseball. And not that like if there's people out there who are like, I ruined my life because of the Mariners, like that's fine, you know, like live your life, but I did not want to become that person. Yeah, let the Mariners take hold now. Why not? Brent, in my Twitter research, I also saw something, I'm going to paraphrase, but it was about you essentially trying to pivot from jock to artist as an adult, which is kind of what we're talking about right now. A famously tough jump to make. I would say Shaq has done it pretty well. Bernie Williams, he had like a Spanish guitar album that is apparently pretty good.
Did he really? I didn't know that.
Yeah,
Victor
Oladipo can sing. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, wow. Now that I'm thinking about it, like it is usually like very harmless singing is usually the route they go, or Shaq doing like the Will Smith style of rapping. Do you know who Namdi Asamoah is?
That name sounds familiar, but I can't pin it down.
He was a defensive back in the NFL in the mid-2000s, but now he's married to Kerry Washington, and she, like, puts him in stuff. It's very interesting.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah.
He's, Rick Fox.
Very good-looking, too. Oh, yeah, Rick Fox.
Like, that's like a Rick Fox type, yeah. Oh, and then Wilt Chamberlain, probably the best example. You know, he was a staff writer on the Veronica Mars reboot.
No, that's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, but yes, that is true.
Oh, yep, you're right.
Wilt Chamberlain is like very
dead.
That's
what we found out, is I'm racist.
And have not a great concept of time, because I believe Wilt Chamberlain has been dead since the 90s.
Yeah, you're right. Yep. Oh, mulligan. I'm going to take a mulligan on this one. You know who's a better example? Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. That's what I said all along.
I think Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is doing the same thing to like young aspiring comedy writers as Carrot Cake Oreo is doing to these up and coming cookies. That is a callback, folks.
This guy, he's done a podcast before. All right.
But anyway, as I was saying, how has the pivot from jock to artist gone? Do you like, I'm sure you've met other stand-ups who are like very into sports or also played college sports at some level, and then you like find your little your tribe, or do you go the other way, like you only want to talk to people who like were making web series in high school and stuff like that?
That's funny. No, I usually like I've often bonded over sports in like comedy circles because you mentioned you were, you know, kind of in the scene for a minute there, and it's a cold world and it's a bunch of strangers and it's hard to feel like you belong. So if you can connect over anything, you just kind of do it.
Yeah, you got to play your cards like very correctly. Yes. I remember I had a joke about a classic like what I look like joke where I said I looked like if Russell Wilson went to liberal arts school. And that one usually played pretty well because people know who Russell Wilson is, you know? You can't get any more niche than that. Although one time, shout out to the open mic at Comedy Underground. Thomas Rawls was there one time, and he loved that joke, which I thought was very funny.
Oh, really? Thomas Rawls was there?
Yeah, it was a big night for the Underground. Big night. I think the Seahawks might have had, like, an event, you know? Because none of the players live in Seattle. They're always in the suburbs.
Yeah.
So I was guessing, in my head, I was like, why would he be here? And I figured he was either, like, date night or the Seahawks had a nearby event and he, like, came by afterwards.
Must have. Just because you brought that up and it's relevant. One time, poor Randy Johnson, he came to a late show at the Comedy Underground. This is probably, like, you know, 2013, 2014, he was one of maybe six people in the audience. And we talked to him for a little while afterwards because it was like me and the whoever was like running it that night was also a big baseball fan. And so we ended up chatting with him for a little while. And he was like, what happened? Like, this used to be like the spot. Like, there were Mariners here every night and every night it was packed. Like, what happened? And we were like, I don't know, man, but it's nice to meet you.
Wow. That is deeply sad. I would feel like guilty for like making Randy Johnson upset if that happened to me.
It was like, oh boy, I hope he, we let him sit as far away as he wanted so that we could not see him or tell if he was laughing. And I think that was the only way to go.
Well, and poor dude is 6'10". Like he can't blend in anywhere.
Impossible.
So what are your earliest Mariner memories? Were you like aware of what was happening in the late 90s? Do you remember Randy Johnson specifically and that whole gang?
Oh, baby, do I ever. Thank you. Yeah, thanks for asking. I was like the prime age. I was born in 86. So I was the prime age to get hooked on the Mariners right at like the perfect time. So like 95, I'm 8 or 9 years old through 2001. I'm, you know, 14 to 15. Those are primo sports enjoyment ages. You are old enough to like understand baseball and like the scope of it. And, but still young enough that like I hadn't started, you know, smoking pot or drinking or going to parties or anything. And so like the 95 Mariners, especially huge touchstone for me. That season was big for my whole family. Cause like I grew up, my dad was a machinist for Boeing. My mom worked for Premier Blue Cross. And so I'm pretty sure they just kind of got tickets from work sometimes. Cause we didn't like, I don't know, we didn't go to a lot of Seahawks or Sonics games. And I know that like Boeing and Premier were both like, you know, Mariners advertisers. So I think I'm pretty sure every time we went to a game when I was young, it was because we got free tickets. And that would have been like 93 to 95. And then when the Mariners made that run in 95, that was like primo age for me, like looking at baseball cards, reading box scores in the newspaper, seeing them, you know, over the course of a month gain 10 games on the Angels. The one game World Series was a huge deal in my family. We all watched it. My parents were actually at the game 5 against the Yankees. I know, right? And I watched it at my grandparents' house, and I still like the YouTube footage of the double now will make me emotional and weepy, and I am an emotionally stunted adult who is trying to like relearn how to cry when I am sad. And one of the things that like gets me is Mariners related things. So like, I don't know if you saw that Dorktown documentary series that like
of
John
course.
Boz. Yeah. That I've maybe cried in a movie like four times. I could think of what movies have made me cry? I know Joe Dirt's one of them, which is embarrassing, but
Happy Feet. Happy Feet 2.
Happy Feet got you?
I was a child, so yeah. I think Happy Feet was a big one. Brother Bear also, there's a really sad part in that movie.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to think. I honestly, the only movie that I'm 100% certain made me cry was Joe Dirt, and I'm sure there are a couple others, but this
that's so sick.
This, yeah. This is the part when Kid Rock's like, "No one loves you. Get out of here, Joe Dirt." It's very sad. But that Dorktown documentary series, I cried like I had to stop, like I had to like pause it multiple times so that I could like have a moment for myself because I couldn't stop crying. The double gets me when they were talking about, you know, Felix. Ugh, what a tragic character Felix is. So yeah, sorry to go back to your question. Yeah, it was really the 95 Mariners really set it off, but it was also like I was a kid who liked baseball just as Griffey came to town, and Griffey was an undeniable superstar on the field and off. He was like the coolest guy to root for, who made watching baseball so exciting and so fun that it was impossible not to watch that team. And then when you think about who else was on the 95 Mariners, Edgar, Griffey, Randy Johnson, A-Rod, was A-Rod on the 95? No, A-Rod was
sort of. What? He was like technically on the team. He was on deck when Edgar hit the double. It's one of my favorite
Mariners
trivia things.
He's in the pile. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, they during those what I would consider the prime Mariners years, which is like 95 through 2001, I was the right age to fall in love with this stupid fucking franchise. Sorry, is it okay if I say the F-bombs?
You can swear on this podcast, yes.
Okay, good. Yeah, I don't want Bleacher Report. Is Lookout Landing Bleacher Report? It doesn't matter.
SB Nation, thank you very much.
SB Nation. Oh, so, I'm so sorry. SB Nation, I take it back. I don't want to get you in trouble. Anyways, I forgot what I was saying. But yeah, 95 Mariners really set it off. And at this point, yeah, I'm still invested, and I kind of wish I weren't, but I am.
Yeah, it's such a hard line to walk. And like for me, I'm a little too young for Griffey. I was born during the 95 season, which I know longtime listeners of this show will know because I talk about it all the time. But so it's so funny to me how like for any Mariners fan under like 40, I guess you either had 95 as your entry point or 2001. And like if you don't like at least those eras, you know, and then after that, it's just like so, so bleak unless you're like a full adult falling in love with Robinson Cano, I guess.
Yeah. So what was what was the entry point? Because I feel like you was it the 2001 Mariners? I feel like you were maybe a smidge young.
I was. Yeah. I 2001. It's like very blurry. I mean, I remember being at the stadium a lot, but I don't remember like details, obviously. Yeah. I was at the Carlos Guillen bunt game, but don't remember anything about it.
Oh, that's sick, dude. That's so sick.
I know. I wish that I was older because I've done a lot of old sporting events on YouTube during the pandemic, and I watched that game again, and it's hilarious because, like, Ricky Henderson is on the Mariners. Aaron Seeley throws, like, the game of his life, and, like, watching him now, you're like, this guy was not great. Like, he was really good at pitching, you know, but not like great. He just could throw the ball wherever he wanted, sort of thing. And you're like, wow, this guy was our ace, you know?
Yeah.
So I've been doing a lot of that, trying to like re-watch early Mariners history through an adult lens rather than a 5-year-old lens. So that's been fun. But my entry point was just watching on TV, because like my parents were kind of like you. I mean, not age-wise, but like they were like they fell in love with the Mariners in 95 because they had just – neither of my parents are from Washington, but they moved here in the 90s. And then like that whole – you know, obviously like Griffey's here. The Mariners are winning. Everyone kind of buys in. So yeah. They started really liking the Mariners. And then when I was born and from then on out, they were just like always on TV. So I think Dave Niehaus helped a lot. Like if they had not had such a captivating announcer. Rick Riz too, because we were a baseball on the radio family as well.
Both of those
guys are very important. Yeah, they were. Who were your so like everyone obviously talks about Griffey. He's like, you know, he is the Mariners. Who was your guy when you were a kid who like in retrospect wasn't very good?
Oh, you know, Vince. Well, the guy who I really loved back then. Oh, well, I mean, when I was a kid, Joey Cora. Because he was, you know, he was childlike and consistent and very good for a little while. But, you know, in retrospect, wasn't great. But the other guy who I think about a lot is Vince Coleman, who was, I think he was only on the Mariners for like half of that 95 season. I could be wrong, but he was a guy who just showed up and was like immediately a contributor. And it was like, I think maybe Julio Cruz Jr. was later, but Julio Cruz Jr. was a guy who played for the Mariners and was really good. And then they traded him and it seemed like
Jose Cruz Jr.
Jose Cruz Jr. Yeah, sorry. Thank you. Yeah. Oops. Exposed. But yeah, if I remember correctly, he was a left fielder and everyone was really excited about him. And then he got traded and Vince Coleman stepped in and was phenomenal for half a season and then disappeared. And so like I have very fond memories of Vince Coleman, even though, he was, you know, he was probably fine, but it just seemed like he just kind of stepped in when the Mariners needed him most and was sort of a hero in that way.
Yeah, that's also what I love about being a kid, because I don't know if your timeline is correct or, like, obviously you forgot one of the guys' names. Like, that's the beauty of being a childhood fan. You're like, I love these guys. Turns out, like, none of the things I remember about him were correct, sort of thing. Like, I bought a GameCube during the pandemic mainly to play MVP baseball, like my favorite game ever.
MVP 05?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
hell
you know.
Yeah, dude.
And Pokey Reese.
I logged a lot of hours.
Yeah, Pokey Reese is on the Mariners in that game, and I remember
he's so good in 05, MVP 05. He's so good.
But yeah, exactly. So as a kid, when I was playing that game in real time, I was like, "Oh yeah, Pokey Reese, Mariners." But turns out Pokey Reese never played a game for the Mariners.
Never played a game.
He was like
game.
Signed by them, but never actually made it to the field for whatever reason. So like it's a weird Mandela effect I have from like Mariners legend Pokey Reese, and then turns out he didn't do a single thing.
Yeah, I think he like hurt. He got injured and then released or something. But yeah, he never played a game. And that MVP 2005 Mariners team was so good for how bad that team ended up being in real life. Classic Mariners stuff.
Well, that's the first Beltre Sexton year, and Beltre is like straight up, I think, the best hitter in the game.
He's a god.
Like maybe
in
it's
that
like Pujols,
game. Yeah.
John Dowd, and then him.
Yeah, and Ichiro is unstoppable in that game as well. Yeah,
it really is like such a, because I haven't been like interested in thinking very hard during the pandemic, you know. I've been doing a lot of revert back to old comforts. I don't want to like start anything new, so I've just been playing old video games, like I said, watching sporting events where I know who's gonna win. And I think it's been like a balm, you know. It's a great way to ignore what's happening, although I do feel a lot better now, not to get to like pandemic conversation, but seems like things are trending upwards.
Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm feeling hopeful about the next few months and this summer. But yeah, I feel you. I've just been powering through TV. And also, it's funny you mentioned like finding old sports on YouTube, because like one of the things that I've done more during the pandemic than I have before is like old English Premier League highlights. It sort of feels like I learned about a band that I didn't know about that has this huge back catalog. And now it's like, oh yeah, I get to go back and like experience all of this new. And so, you know, every once in a while, some of it is like, I don't really get why everybody's excited about this, but I guess it's important. But this Robbie Keane game against against Arsenal in 87 is a big deal to you guys. I don't know. It looks like he just scored a couple goals, but like, let's keep making our way through the catalog.
We're living pretty similar lives here. I've done a lot of like 2 a.m. watching Thierry Henry Arsenal highlights where he's like absolutely just destroying some like defender with the giant collar who has like horrible bleach blonde hair and that sort of vibe. Yeah. I have absolutely been doing that. You mentioned like cautious optimism and like how, you know, I feel like Mariner fandom sort of seeps into your brain and makes you like mm-hmm. kind of guarded. Like you can't really go full emotion into a lot of things because you're afraid of getting hurt. Is that something that you think has informed like your worldview and your approach to life, like being a Mariners fan and all of the negative effects that come with it?
Dude, 100%. I was thinking about that. I've been thinking about this a lot. I was very excited. Quick aside, this is like a small dream come true to be on the lookout, to be involved in a lookout landing thing. I used to, in like 2009, 2010, I used to like, this was before I had like a smartphone where I could look at the internet. I would like sneak away from work to look at lookout landing updates like during the early Jack Zarenzik era and stuff. So you are making a dream come true. So thank you. Two, yes, being a Mariners fan has in some ways, like I think warped my own expectations for myself in a way that is sort of sad when I think about it, where like, you know, I don't expect to win anymore. I just don't. And I mean that in terms of the Mariners and like, look, being a 34-year-old comedian in LA who is not successful by most traditional metrics, it's like it's hard not to think that like maybe if I had lived in a city with a good baseball team, I could believe in myself. You know what I mean?
I absolutely know what you mean. It's really easy to have the Eeyore mentality that sort of swallows all Mariners fans and like makes you like immediately acceptant of any L's that you take. You're like, well, I guess this is what was supposed to happen.
Yeah. I'll, yes.
You know, get them next time.
Yeah. I don't think it was a conscious decision, but somewhere around 2015, I had to like emotionally take a step back from the Mariners. I was very excited about the Robinson Cano era and, you know, it didn't work out like I hoped. I went back and looked through some of my old tweets. Like I searched through my own Twitter for Mariners related tweets and I was pumped about the 2014 Mariners and you know, they were an okay team. It was honestly one of the better teams they've put on the field in the last 20 years, didn't make the playoffs. And then, you know, 2015, 2016, I think if I remember correctly, were both very bad teams. And I
16
yeah,
was
I
good
think,
16. They were one game okay. away again.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, but I think 15, they were kind of bad. I think it was around then that I stopped like paying attention as closely because I had to, man. I think that, you know, I had also just sort of shifted in my own life and was busier at night than I had been when I was younger, but I couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't get that excited and be that invested anymore. And that's kind of where I'm at now, where like I want the Mariners to win. I'm watching highlights. I'm looking at the box scores. But like, I don't know if I've watched a full Mariners game in the last 3 years.
Yeah, I think it's a natural feeling for any Mariners fan right now. I definitely took the step back after 2018. So the last Cano year, like that year, they were doing the every other year thing. So 14, 16, and 18, they were pretty good. And then after 18 fell apart and they traded everyone. That's when I was like, this is a natural place for me to like stop investing so much. Obviously I was still invested, like was still working for Lookout Landing and like doing this, but I wasn't watching all nine innings nearly as much anymore.
Yeah, I can't. I just can't. I don't have the attention span. And I think after 2018 was like another step back for me too, because I moved to LA. So I wasn't as present in my life anyways. And yeah, there was the fire sale, and so there was just nothing to be excited about. And so, like, yeah, the last couple of years, before I deleted my Facebook, the Mariners Facebook page is actually kind of great, and they do like a little highlight package after every game that kind of shows the like relevant stuff. So I would watch that every day. But last season I couldn't even do that, man.
Was that pandemic related or just Mariner fatigue, or both, I guess?
I think a little bit of both. I think, yeah, beginning of the season, I know that I did watch most of the first game of the season, because I was excited about the prospect of a 60-game season, because I knew that the Mariners were not good enough to make the playoffs in a 162-game right. season. But the opportunity for flukes with a 60-game season did excite me. And, of course, I was immediately let down, like, so fast. It was apparent that even with the shortened season, there was no way they were making the playoffs.
Well, the Mariners got a shitty draw because they had to play the West, like the Astros, Dodgers, yeah. and Padres, and the A's, yeah. I guess, all very good teams. So we really had no chance. And they did better than, yeah. I think, a lot of people expected them to. I will always mm-hmm. remember the pandemic season for the Mariners finishing ahead of the Angels, which is still very funny to me.
Yeah, I like that. And Kyle Lewis, you know, it was exciting to sort of track Kyle Lewis, you know, from a distance. And, you know, and now I'm at a stage where I'm trying so hard not to get excited because,
Well, that was my next question. Are you a prospect guy? Like, how are you feeling about, you know, the idea of them maybe being good next year?
I think because I still follow the Mariners and I'm still reading about the Mariners and I'm still, you know, it's just sort of generally ingesting sports stuff on the internet. I'm aware of, you know, Julio Rodriguez and Jared Kelenic and some of these other guys who seem to be sure things. And the second I got excited about it, fucking Kevin Mather has to go be the dumbest, just the, like, what a fucking moron to blow up your baseball career trying to impress the Bellevue Rotary Club. What kind of fucking, you absolute dipshit? Because yeah. it's like, he was clearly just trying to sound cool to these people exactly. who he's never
met. Who are not cool.
Yeah, they're just, I mean, I'm sure they're fine, nice old people or whatever, but like, why are you talking tough to these strangers? It was so stupid that my immediate response was, oh, he's trying to get fired. There's some sort of contract.
Oh, that's not a theory I've heard yet. I like that.
There's some sort of contract thing that I don't understand. He is trying to get fired. But then when he resigned, I was like, oh no, he's truly stupid. He is a stupid, stupid man who has been in charge of this thing that I have devoted so much of my emotional well-being to over the last 20 years.
Right. And which does kind of, like, make everything make more sense too. You're like, oh, okay, yes. this guy, he yes. was part of the reason.
Yes. I didn't realize that this person was so dumb because no one ever recorded him. But it turns out you put a microphone on this guy, he'll show his ass within seconds.
Yeah, so many theories. I had not considered the trying to get fired because he was also part owner, so that would kind of complicate things. I don't really think
I didn't realize
owners
that.
Can get fired. Yeah, but also, I mean, other theories I had was that mug he was sipping from was alcohol. That definitely came to mind.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that's a speculation. I'm not saying that as fact, but he was drinking from the mug a lot. Mm-hmm. Other one was that he doesn't understand like the recording element of it. I think, I mean, the weird part is, everyone's made this joke, but, like, you know, we've all been on Zoom all year. Like, you know when it's recording. You can see the red light that says recording. But I think he didn't know that that meant it was going to be for later use. Yeah, I think he just thought it was like when you call customer service and they record. Yeah. That's kind of what I thought, because there's no way. If they had told him up top, like, hey, we're going to put this on our YouTube channel, mm-hmm. I don't think there's any way he says any of that. But also, like you said, he is very dumb.
Yeah, that's because I think you're right. I think someone at the Rotary Club got chewed out after this. I think
they deleted it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that no one told him. That's what I mean by he's dumb. No one told him we're going to put this on the internet. So he never considered that, which in the year of our Lord 2021 on the internet, if you don't consider that, you're so stupid. You should not be in charge of this business operation that is so valuable, not only monetarily, but like emotionally to so many people and a region. Like who, whatever.
It was an interesting look into like, oh, this guy is not online, because like that's really the only explanation. How would you not understand what is happening unless you like truly never go on the internet, which I think is possible. I mean, he's of that age for sure.
Yes. And I think people who are not online are cool. Like when you hear about like an actor who's not online, you're like, oh, that's cool. Yeah. Like Mads Mikkelsen is a guy who's like, I do not use the internet. And it's like, damn, that's cool. But sorry, if you're Kevin, if you're running a professional sports organization, you got to be a little bit more online. Like you don't need to be, making fake Twitter accounts to defend yourself and your shirt collars like Colangelo, but you need to be aware of what happens on the internet.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
Yeah, it was incredible to see it all unfold in real time too, because obviously the meeting was before, but then like once it hit the internet, the whole thing happened in one day, like Dazed and Confused style, where you're like, oh my God, there's more and more coming out, and by the end of this, he might be fired. Yeah. And then, you know, like it was just so fun in like a very perverse way to just watch it all happen.
Yeah, it was. And I was thinking about this the other day. That was, for me, that experience, I became so regretful that I never got a trashy Mariners tattoo when I was 21. Oh, I wish I had. Because, like, I know better now. I can't do it now. But if I were now a 34-year-old man with, like, the baseball compass on my bicep and I could pull it out at parties and be like, yeah, I've always been a winner, that would be so funny. Ugh.
I do love, the other, like, very niche fun thing about being a Mariners fan is, like, the weird irony of it. Like, yeah, I love this team. Have they given me anything? No, they have not, but I still love it.
Yeah, and then you, like, you're fucking, like, Calvin's dad from Calvin and Hobbes. Like, no, this is, being a Mariners fan builds character. And
this is actually great. I would never want to be a Yankees fan. That's
If I had been a Yankees fan and just had wins all the time, just, like, experienced joy based on sports, well, that would be, I would be weak and soft.
Do you think being a Mariners fan has informed your comedy and, like, the things that you're willing to share on stage, or, like, your sort of disposition? Like, do you think that you are like the way you are on stage in a little bit because of how the Mariners have impacted your brain?
I hope not. I don't want to give them that power. But I think in some ways, I think indirectly, yes, because I think the Mariners are the reason I played baseball, and the like playing baseball, I think that it does ultimately like did ultimately like inform the performer I became, because I mean, in retrospect, this is like when we were talking about like transitioning from jock to artist, like I'm glad I played sports, but I should have been doing performance stuff the whole time. Part of the reason why I kind of excelled at baseball was the like pitching, especially, you're out there alone. Like that's a personality type where like you want to be the one that everyone is focused on. And like I relished having that attention, and part of the reason I was successful in high school, because I was good in high school. Part of the reason I was successful in high school is because I was very comfortable in that spotlight, and I I was, even though I did not have dominant stuff, I was a dominant presence on the mound. And when you're playing, you know, 16-year-olds, that's enough. Like, they, hitting is very hard. There are maybe, on any given high school baseball team, there are maybe three kids who can hit, and the rest of them are scared. And if you are not, and you look them in the eye and you throw strikes and you are not afraid and you go after them, you will be very successful. And so I think that that has informed the way when I am at my best, that's how I am on stage, is I am not afraid of you. I am in charge. This is my game to lose. This is my set to lose. And I don't, you're a child to me. So I will look you in the eye and I will dominate this set and then I will leave, except, you know, you get to enjoy it.
Yeah. Guess what? Loud people in the front responding to my jokes. My arm feels great. I can go three more innings if you want.
Yeah. I can do this all day.
That is very funny. I was going to ask if you have experienced Angels fans in Southern California, because I went to college in Southern California and they seemed very few and far between. Like, I feel like to be true Angels fan, you have to be like Orange County to the bone, which is not really a kind of person I was trying to be around. So what have been your experiences, if any?
Where did you go to college?
University of San Diego. So not in the LA area, but enough Orange County kids made their way down there.
So Angels fans, not a ton. 'Cause like you said, that's a pretty Orange County specific thing. But one of my best friends from college is from Newport Beach. And so he's a big Angels fan and some of his friends are big Angels fans. So I have been to multiple games in Anaheim to see the Mariners play the
worst
Angels
stadium. God, I hate that stadium.
Yeah. It's bland. Like, it's technically, it checks all the boxes, but it is soulless.
Some baseball writer, I can't remember who it was, this was a long time ago, said it's like the Chili's of Major League Baseball stadiums.
Yep. That's perfect. Yeah. Did you go to any games at Petco? I don't know if it's still called Petco.
I did. Yeah. I did all the Southern California stadiums, Petco, Angel Stadium, and Dodger Stadium. And nice. Petco and Dodger Stadium are definitely in a class of their own for much different reasons, obviously. Yeah. Like, one is full nostalgia porn. The other one is like the ideal version of a modern park. So I love both those places. But Petco it's very much like, I liked it because it felt a lot like Safeco, where you can, like, you're in the city kind of, but not in like in a way that's like inconvenient, you know, like there's like a designated area. You can walk to a bunch of places afterwards.
There's like a park in the stadium, basically. Yeah. It's a very cool. But yeah, to answer your question, not a lot. LA is a Dodgers town. People love the Dodgers, and you know, I would say now that like the Dodgers are kind of like my secondary team. I'm Mariners for life, but like now that I live here and they truly do not play in the same league, literally or figuratively, I root for the Dodgers if they're playing anyone other than the Mariners, and I love it. Angels fans.
I think that's fine.
Angels fans. I haven't had any bad experiences with Angels fans. And I, in fact, this was 2009. I was fortunate enough to be at a game in Anaheim, where the Mariners were losing by three going into the top of the ninth. And Jose Lopez hit a three-run home run to tie the game. And then they won in extra innings. Ugh.
That's beautiful.
What a choice moment. Yeah, and it was great. And I don't know. Anaheim fans, I don't get the impression that there are any like real like ride or die like aggressive Angels fans. Orange County is notoriously casual, and I think that tracks with Anaheim fans to me.
Oh yeah, big time. It's so funny to me though, like LA, like you said, 1000% a Dodger town, which is why it's so funny to me that the Angels are like, oh yeah, we're in Los Angeles too. Because like, A, no you're not.
No, you're not.
Anaheim is not close. I get
that's
so
like
mad
a 3-hour drive if you go on a Friday.
I know. This is another like kind of ongoing bit I have both on the podcast and in writing. Whenever I can get a dig in at how dumb it is that a team in Anaheim claims Los Angeles, I take it 100% of the time.
Yeah, they deserve to be ridiculed for that forever.
Absolutely. Okay, I wanted to give you this last part to get any sort of take off. If you have any sort of deeply believed opinion, anything very unique to yourself that you would like to share in relation to the Mariners, if you have a hot take about uniforms or a prospect or anything you want to share, you can go ahead and do that.
Let's see what do I think is my hottest Mariners take?
Let's start with the uniforms to warm you up. Okay. What's your favorite and least favorite Mariner uniform?
Ooh, okay. My favorite's the teal, baby. I love the teal.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, me too.
I love the teal. With the teal brim hat too. Big fan of that. I've also in recent years become a big fan. I don't know if they still do it, but the like really dark blue I like a lot, and then like the cream. I like the cream a lot. least favorite, you know, just. Like the standard grays, who cares? But they're not supposed to be exciting. Do I want to see the Mariners change their logo? Because I feel like they have, for an unsuccessful franchise, they have committed to this jersey and logo. And I've been watching Mad Men lately, and part of you know, a lot of what Mad Men is about is like starting over and. And it's like, how has no one decided to start over? I guess, whatever. I want them to change uniforms, but I also know that whatever they do, I will hate. So it's hard for me to say. But I think that the Mariners uniforms throughout my life have all been good. Like, I think the blue and yellow was good. I think the Trident was good. The current iteration, for being a thing that was made in the 90s, it doesn't look super 90s. I think they actually did a great job of
making a uniform
that sort of fits the city and could stand the test of time.
Yeah, it is weird to think about how little 90s logos have lasted. Like, I feel like a lot of them were so cartoonish, like the Toronto Raptors immediately come to mind.
Exactly,
like that one is
such
a signifier of the mid-90s now, where the Mariners won. It's totally, like, it does hold up. But I agree. I think they need tweaks more than a full makeover. Like, definitely keep teal. Definitely keep a navy blue alternate. But, like, the regular home whites and the home grays could use, like, some pizzazz. Even if it's just wearing the teal-brimmed hats as the regular hat.
Yep.
I think that's, like, a slam dunk idea.
I agree. Yeah, because, like, the regular navy hat, It's just boring, you know?
It's a good hat, but it's not going to like wow anyone.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, those are my jersey takes. Do I have any hot? Adrian Beltre didn't get the respect he deserved. Maybe this isn't that hot of a take in like, you know, more informed baseball circles, but Adrian Beltre was a phenomenal third baseman who came in with just standards that were just far too high. He said, you know, he had a one historic season that was unrepeatable. And then he came to the Mariners, and I was guilty of this. I was disappointed for a while that he didn't bat 350 and hit 60 home runs, because that is unreasonable to expect of a person. And he became like one of my favorite baseball players to watch even after he left the Mariners. And so I think this is mostly me trying to like, ameliorate personal guilt. I hope I use that word right. But yeah, sort of retroactively, like going back and being like, Brent, you were wrong. You were wrong about Adrian Beltre. He was very good when he was a Mariner and just like a joyful character to watch. So, you know, put some respect on his name.
That's a good level take for this audience for sure, because I feel like we are probably kind of divided. The worst thing that happened to Beltre, you're 100% right, was hitting 48 home runs or whatever it was in 2004. If he had just had like a normal season for his standards, then the expectations don't come. Obviously, he'd be less rich, but like that is fine in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, and I think ultimately what helped him in my eyes was Sean Figgins, because he came a little bit later, right?
Yeah,
and he was just a complete disappointment in every way. Ugh.
Yeah, I'm worried now that Robinson Cano is going to get the Beltre treatment, like, retroactively because of the suspension. I think that's going to cloud a lot of people's memory of him in Seattle. And he was, like Beltre, very, very good. Like,
very,
there was
very
one
good.
Year, I think 2016, he hit 39 home runs or something. Like, for a second baseman, that's unheard of.
And he was, like, man, I was so excited because it not only was he – did it seem like, oh, we signed this, you know – possibly generational talent who I had no, it didn't seem like there was any way we were even in the running. So when we signed him, I was so excited, not only for Robinson Cano, but for the culture shift that I thought was going to happen, which is too much to put on him as a single player. There was too much broken for him to fix by himself. But what he did, yeah, he played very consistently, very well. And he, like, in terms of being fun to watch, I think it goes Griffey and then in my lifetime Griffey and then Cano, because they both were so smooth and they both here's a hot take that's not specifically Mariners, but it is baseball. Bat flips, Korea owns the bat flip. They are the best at it. The Korean baseball leagues, I don't know if you read that, Mina Kimes did a long story about bat flips like 5-6 years ago. I love it. It's fascinating.
I did read that.
I think American baseball, we're learning how to bat flip, but really what we excel at is the bat drop. And I think Griffey perfected it. And I think Cano also was very good at it. Where they hit a home run and the second they make contact, they are instantly bored with how great they are. It is so normal to them that Robinson Cano and Griffey would both do that thing where they would hit a home run and just like slump and drop their bat like ugh, great, another one.
God, now I have to run around the bases. Are you fucking kidding me? I think that's a good take. My thing about bat flips is that you can tell when they're natural and when they're not. You know, so like with the strut or like the drop plus strut, that's a great way to find out like who's naturally cool, because you can't plan that. It's immediate. So like you hit it, you drop the bat, you start your cool guy walk. If you're not a cool guy, guess what? You don't have a cool guy walk. Yeah. That's when you get the weird like chunky bat flips where like halfway down to first, they realize, oh, I could just throw this in the air and I'll make SportsCenter or whatever. That's so lame.
Those are bad. I because that's another thing that I will fall into YouTube holes is like bat flips. Oh, love a bat flip. Yeah. And I just recently, I was so friggin' mad the MLB released their, like on their Instagram page, it was like top 10 bat flips of 2020. And I was so disappointed. And I think here's maybe even a hotter take. I blame Jose Bautista because he made it look cool in that playoff game when he hit that monster bomb to like win a game, and he like stood there for a second and then he threw it. And it was, I think that everyone interpreted that as like the way he threw the bat was cool, when it was like, no, there was so much more context necessary to make that cool, because the flip itself was, you know, a little, like you were saying, a little clunky, a little extra, frankly. And I think that's what a lot of these bat flips were in this top 10 list, where someone hitting a home run and then you can see them think, oh, I got to throw this fucking bat.
Yes,
I want it to be a natural extension of your greatness. Is the bat ends up in places when you are done and it's an unconscious decision. And I think some people, like Brett Boone, I think is a good example of someone who was a little bit, there was a little bit more like effort and thought, and it's not as cool, but he kind of made it work. I think he kind of figured out the formula.
Well, he had the immediate one too. He would hit it and then flip right away, not halfway to first.
Yes.
The Bautista one, you're right. It's that beat. Yeah, the beat that Batista takes. It's a great lesson in timing, honestly. Like, you have to understand the way things will look if you let it breathe for a little bit. And he was great at that. I also love, I think, just watching the home run until it lands, also a very cool move. Like, just stay completely still.
Yeah, that's a big one.
All right, well, we got you all riled up right at the end, which maybe wasn't a good idea. Feel free to, like, take a lap around your block or whatever to cool down. But yeah, I think we've reached the end of the rope here. I do need to let you plug or whatever, get your shit off. I know you said you have a lot of main character syndrome, so this kind of feeds into that. Tell us where we can find you, stroke your own ego, do all of that for as long as you want.
For sure. I mean, look up my album, search, you know, just scan through the high life section of Spotify until you find my my comedy EP. It's called 20 for 30. I currently work on a couple of podcasts that are very good. If you're interested in The Sopranos, listen to Pod Yourself a Gun. If you are interested in video games, listen to the Reactivators podcast. I also have a podcast that it's over now, but it was a serialized comedy sci-fi called Charlie Kaufman's Entourage. I made 100 episodes. Honestly, started episode 56.
Wow.
And yeah, that's where you can find me for now. Hopefully I'll be able to, like, promote shows in the near future, but, you know, those aren't really happening for me right now.
Yeah, is it just all Zoom, or are you doing, like, backyard shows? What's the vibe there?
Dude, no, I've done a few Zoom shows here and there. I haven't done any, like, I haven't been on a stage since, like, October for, like, an outdoor thing. I don't know. I haven't been going out of my way to get on some of these outdoor shows, because most of them, it still sort of feels like, I don't know if we're supposed to be doing this. I don't know if this is worth it. I can wait. I don't know. Yeah. But hopefully post-vaccine summer, safe sex, paychecks, in-person shows is going to be sick.
I completely am stealing safe sex paychecks. I have not heard that yet. Did you make that up?
No, that's a Race Remmard song.
No way. Shit. Okay, cool. Yeah. Shout out to Race Remmard. They listen, so they'll be thrilled about that.
Slim Jimmy, what's up?
get Brent on your next album, Race Remmard. That's the next logical career move for you in the jock to artist pivot.
Ugh, would love that.
Brent is also on Twitter at Brent Flyberg.
Oh, yes, thank you. Look me up on Twitter, please.
I am on Twitter at mroberson22. There's numbers in it because I made it in high school. Not going to live that one down. Not scrubbing it. If you find anything on there that is bad, guess what? No, you didn't. I have no idea what you're talking about. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Appreciate it. Press subscribe if you feel so inclined. I have no idea what the next couple weeks a podcast will look like. We had real news to cover for a while and, like, interviews with prospects, and now they're all in Arizona and the news is just spring training is happening. So we're probably going to get creative, but we hope you listen during all of that. Brent, anything else before we go?
Thank you so much for having me. I truly, if you're listening and you're like, I don't have anyone to talk to the Mariners about, fucking hit me up, dude. I don't have anyone to talk about it with, and I could talk about it nonstop. Oh, I really could.
I hope you do. I hope you just stop people on the street and talk to them about Logan Gilbert's curveball or whatever. Get as specific as possible to really scare them away.
Yeah, I'll ask him. Hey, you remember Unieski Betancourt? Ah, he seemed promising.
Better than you remember. And then they run away. And that should be your next, like, 3 weeks or so.
Perfect.
Well, good luck with that. Thank you again to everyone who listened, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.